Welcome to Coffee and Therapy, where we spill the tea on therapy-related topics, sip our favorite coffee, and share our expertise with parents, professionals, clinicians, and anyone who could benefit from a little therapy. Hello, and welcome back to Coffee and Therapy. Yes, it's my favorite. If you couldn't guess by that, it's Sarah, and she's back.
Hey, I'm back.
Oh my goodness,
it's been so long.
It's been so long.
I've missed you guys so much.
We missed you.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Sarah also has a big life event. She left us.
I did, but I'm back, so I didn't really leave you.
No, she's back. But you're reporting from
the Peach State, y'all. Ow! I'm a Southern girl. I can't even do it.
Very deep red, with her thick New York accent. She's a Southern girl.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, big changes. I think I owe it all to this podcast, though, because we manifested. We manifested out in the beginning of the year that I was going to buy a house. And guess what? Your girl bought a house.
Listeners, she did it.
I did. So you know what? That says the power of manifestation. So do that stuff, y'all.
Oh, it's so real. It's so real.
Speak it into existence.
I did.
And obviously, Courtney's here.
Yes, hello. Yay.
And we have a special guest, Allie.
Hello.
You can talk, Allie. It's okay.
Allie's like, what are you? Should I wait to be introduced? Hello. Thank you for having me.
We are excited to have Allie. Allie is another board-certified behavior analyst, but she's not just any BCBA. She's another BCBA who's breaking the mold, doing other things, and ready to have the real conversations with a multimodal team and thinking from different clinical perspectives. So we're super psyched to have her. She's also real fun.
Excited. Yes. I'm excited to be here with you ladies. Very smart, educated women doing their own thing. I love it.
Yes.
Powerful, all master's level clinician women up in the house.
Heck yeah.
Look at that. Degrees on degrees on degrees on degrees on degrees. Yes.
There's a lot of money in this podcast right
sure
now.
Sure is.
A lot of debt.
A lot of debt. Yeah.
Which reactivates October 1st, probably when this episode's releasing. So if you're listening to this.
Why would you bring that up?
You need some Baileys in your coffee and therapy. Feel free to use that not so healthy coping mechanism for that joy that's coming on. Yeah. I don't know why I brought it up, but I did.
It's okay. It's real life. It's okay.
So I was just doing my spreadsheets. That's why. That I just sent to Courtney. Courtney said, I need your finance spreadsheets. And I said, okay.
Yep.
And then I had to do my student loans.
Yep. I'm in the fan, you know? So you know? Got to get my gear in order.
Yes. Well, we are just chatting away over here before we even hit record with Allie, and just so many good things came to light, and I have so many great questions ready for Allie, and I'm sure Courtney and Sarah do too, but you know me, I will steal the limelight, I'm sure, at all times during this. Allie, I would love for you to kind of introduce yourself, what you do as a BCBA, and kind of what took you in that direction, because I think that'll really open the door for a lot of these questions to happen and for our listeners to get that new perspective.
Perfect. Okay, that sounds good. So I'm Allie. I am the owner of a private behavioral consulting company called Balanced Behavior Consulting. My whole like business model is I'm the owner and the sole clinician. I work with all of my clients directly on my own using a combination of applied behavior analysis and acceptance and commitment training. Before doing this, I was a BCBA working in home services. I did a lot with early intervention for about 3.5 years. I was being a BCBA in early intervention. I loved it for a time, but I think I got to a certain point where the business model wasn't working in like a life balance way for me. And I had the pleasure of when I was in working in Massachusetts, I had a couple of clients that had been transitioned over to me by another BCBA who at the time had just kind of started digging into the ACT work. She had tried everything that she could with her clients, but it felt like something was missing for them. So she started using a workbook called Your Life, Your Way, which is the ACT framework for kids. She was moving, she transitioned the case over to me, and I just kind of dug right in. As I started working with my clients, they were older, and I started seeing like almost like an immediate shift. When we started talking about their private events and what was playing a role in the behaviors that they were engaging in, it was like this like light bulb went off in their head that they were like, oh, like this stuff that's going on inside of me is things I can talk about. It's things that somebody can normalize for me. It's something that helps, something that someone can help to support behavior change there too. And I just saw really great outcomes combining that with my ABA practice for my clients. When I moved to Arizona, I went and I worked at the company Courtney is at. She was actually my buddy when I started there. We went to coffee together actually in like my first couple of months working there, which was really fun. And I kept working with those clients on the side. And I realized it was like my favorite part of the week. I was doing it on Saturdays and Sundays, and I was working with the families, and I had this idea one day when I was hitting kind of a burnout phase again with the work that I could go out on my own, and that kind of the main thing that the companies were providing for me were access to clients and helping with insurance and billing. And I knew people that were doing private work, and I knew that there was a need for what I was doing, and the product over time was really good. So I just kind of took a jump, and here I am, just
getting
to do it. Yeah.
Like Sarah did her house.
Yeah. Manifest that stuff. Mm-hmm.
It really is very powerful.
Good job, Sarah.
I sent it myself powerful. For you.
Yeah. And I think too, when we have really strong motivators, it's sometimes easier to leave. Like when I went private mm-hmm. practice as well, I was in a school where Courtney also worked.
Look at her bringing all of us together.
I know.
Exactly.
I know.
And it was very just not the vibe that I wanted to continue mm-hmm. in. And having that motivation to leave that environment set the precedent for private practice. So I think what I'd like to zoom in on first are some of the pain points that you had that made you leave. That mm-hmm. I think are similar to the pain points I bring up when I talk about ABA all the time. And that yeah. a lot of people have questions on, especially in the wake of the American Medical Association news earlier mm-hmm. this summer. And just kind of, yeah, those things.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and I'll make this clear, like, I don't have a problem with any company I've ever worked for. Like, I think my main problem is the way that the industry is structured and kind of what limitations that puts on the companies and just where the model of ABA is at. When I joined the field, like I had at that time, when I joined my master's program, only worked in a school. There weren't RBTs in that school. They were like teacher's assistants. So I didn't even know that RBT was like the structure. So mm-hmm. I entered my master's program not even knowing like what that was going to look like. Which was then totally different when I went into in-home services. Like I joined my master's program being like, oh, I get to do direct work with the kids. Like that sounds so cool. That's what I've always wanted to do. And then when I went into it, I was like, oh, this isn't what that is at all. But here I am in my program. I still loved the work. I loved supervising people. But I think that the main issues that I have is like the biggest one is that even though it's such like a big money making industry, it feels like it's really hard for actual ABA companies to make money, like, or to have it be sustained anyway in a real way that doesn't over. And this is my experience, right? I've always worked for small companies. I've never worked for a large organization, never worked for a private equity company or anything like that. But in my experience, it was always, we're a small startup company. We have to have a high number of billable hours. Everybody has to have a high number of billable hours. The clients have to get their billable to have the business be sustainable. And I didn't really feel comfortable with like compromising my work and like what I felt like my clients needed and what my staff needed for a billable expectation. and like my conscience, like my internal like existence was like struggling all the time because I would leave my clients' houses every day or at the end of every week, knowing that I worked what I was supposed to work, but not feeling like I did what I really needed to do for my clients. And there's just no, they just didn't feel like there was like a way around that. So that's why I didn't leave my company and go to another company. I left and did my own thing.
And I think even if you left the field of ABA, some of what you just said is present in any therapy profession. Because the reality is, we're a client-facing, service-based entity. So there is a minimum number of hours to be able to afford someone their salary. I think, especially knowing the baseline salaries of BCBAs, it makes sense because they're paid really high. And a startup isn't going to be able to get a quality BCBA without matching that expectation. That's why then the hours have to be high. Because Sarah, I know you say it all the time too, like you work a lot, and like you worked a lot when you were working for someone else to be able to maintain those hours, to be able to get the salary. And it is always this battle of, yeah, there's just a number of hours that have to be met to be successful.
You have to have a very specific number that you need per week or per month, and if you don't hit that, you don't pay your bills, and that's not a sustainable business then.
And I will say that's a lot of business outside of ABA as well. Like my husband works in renovation and sales, and like they have to hit quota and numbers, and if they don't, their salaries are contingent on that. So if the company isn't meeting its expectations, you don't get your full salary either. Like there, it's interesting because I think we think this is just, you know, one in an ABA problem, right? But it's a little more than that.
Yeah. No,
And I
it for
think
sure
that,
is. I think just like the like conscious wise too, like I feel icky sometimes doing private practice also. Like all of it feels kind of icky. Like I wish there was a way to have like a middle ground. But yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of us, we don't go into the profession because we think we're going to make a lot of money. We go into it because we want to help people. And I would have comfort like I know, I mean, I'm doing it now, compromising, like making a lot of money to actually get to do the work that I like, right? But yeah, I don't know. I think I am kind of like, I think I mentioned before, but I like try not to look at like the bad side of ABA because I know that like I the way I want to use it is as a teaching method. So the bigger stuff and the other people's experience, I want to hear that too, and that's part of what we talked about. I want to hear what you guys have
Well, I said
experienced
I
on
would
your
come
own
in and
too.
fill Allie in on the bad side of
Yeah.
ABA. Well, and I think that's why we did this podcast. So for everyone listening, they're like, oh my gosh, they have another BCBA on. Yes, because we want to talk about these important topics. This is a hot topic in the world that I work in, the world that almost everyone on this podcast works in, and in the world of children, pediatric autistic therapy right now. And I think if we're not opening the dialogue across the table between these different mediums, we are never going to move forward, and we're never going to be able to have a sense of understanding. And exactly what you were speaking to, Allie, of success for our clients, that we got into this because we care about the people that we serve. And I've been having the same qualm you're having, that therapy is a transactional relationship inherently, and there's no way for it not to be. And it does feel so icky. Because I would love to give people who need services the services that they need. And it just doesn't work like that because of our healthcare system or private pay or systems that are so ingrained in our culture. But that's another podcast episode for my icky vibes of therapy right now, because I feel ya. But as far as, you know, what are the bad side of ABA, I can ask some specific questions that I really would love to know about. The main pain points I have with ABA that I think get brought up, especially in the neurodiversity movement, is something we talked about before we hit record, is this prescriptive minimums for treatment to increase our profit margins. I think that's something that's a hard pill to swallow. And the other thing that I think gets brought up a lot in my world is RBTs, like you were saying, that when you first saw ABA, it was BCBAs maybe in a school providing behavior support systems and, you know, creating sensory rooms and different structures and communication strategies and doing evals for kids and giving guidance to teachers or TAs. Whereas in the home-based services, it's this service model of a BCBA oversees registered behavior technicians. And then it's these people who are minimally knowledgeable about the autistic people that we serve, providing the quote unquote therapy, and it's being billed through the BCBA. And I think that's a really hard pill to swallow.
Yeah.
But what's the really bad stuff that's being said that I think it's critical that BCBAs and ABA therapists know is that there is harm and abuse done by ABA. I think that's the most prevalent thing. And to honor the autistic voices that listen to this podcast and those things, we have to acknowledge that because it is proven that ABA has been traumatic for autistic adults. There has been harm and abuse that's been done. The basis, Lovass, who is the grandfather, the father of ABA, had really deplorable things to think about and say about autistic people. And that's the foundation that it's built on. Now, Freud also isn't, you know, without his faults. And he's the basis of psychotherapy. And a lot of the basis of music therapy is very interesting and questionable. It was actually created by women and then credited by men.
What a surprise. Shocker.
That never happened. What a shocker.
So
reframe that.
Yeah. So I think that's the quote unquote bad, which you were nodding your head the whole time. I'm not saying quote unquote, sorry, listeners, the bad that's been proven and shown. And you're nodding your head. It sounds like you've heard those things before.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah. And like, I guess the thing is like, and we talked about this off camera, but I would identify as neurodivergent. I have ADHD. I struggled a lot with it as a child. And like when I was in my master's class, I was like, they were talking through a token economy, which I literally had in my like fourth grade class because I just wanted attention and I would raise my hand, have something to say, to answer a question, and then I wouldn't say anything. Or I would be like, oh, can I go to the bathroom? And I would just like interrupt the class. So they gave me a little token economy, but it was really more of like a punishment system. Like they wanted me to stop doing something. And, but like, that experience in school wasn't the best, but like the outside help that my parents got from a psychologist who had some help in ABA or a related field really supported like what I needed at that time, like for my parents to understand me and for them to see that like it was a different, that I learned differently than my sisters do, or that maybe more like typically developing, and I'm using air quotes, listeners, typically developing, because I don't know what that means. But like when I was in class, I was like, wow, it would have been really cool if my parents had somebody who was able to take the time to get to know me on a really deep level and then explain to them what they couldn't see. And like, that's what I feel like ABA is. Like, that's how I use it. I get to use a and set of teaching strategies, right? Like,
it's so ahead, interesting because what you're describing is the neurodiversity movement, which is in direct conflict and contrast with ABA, right? Neurodiversity supporting individuals for the most part, you know, for the whole majority, hate ABA, right? Like, this is the wall, this is the dividing line, that if you believe we have different neurotypes and brains are different, you can't like ABA. And if you do ABA, you must not believe that there's different neurotypes and different brains are beautiful. And you're saying,
it's so confusing to me. I don't understand that at all. How I see ABA is that you have this skill set now, that you have the ability to see each individual for their makeup. Like when I would see a BB map, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the BB map, but for listeners who are not, it essentially gives you, it's an assessment to tell you where your different skill levels are at across different areas of verbal behavior. So your ability to follow directions and communicate, whatever. But so when I would see something like that, I'm like, oh, this person has a really strong skill set in this area. That means that if I'm going to teach you, I'm going to teach you something from this area and I'm going to branch out for the other skills. So because that's where your brain is strongest, right? I'm like, that's what ABA to me is.
But yes, I want to be like yes, but I will say in all of my experience, no, never,
Like that's
never.
not the experience that you have with other people.
I mean, not Courtney, Courtney excluding,
Yeah.
because like I know Courtney on a personal level, and but you're speaking from all of the neurodiversity things, right? I'm affirming what your neuroidentity is. I'm affirming your neurotype, and I'm using a strengths-based approach to say, oh, you're really successful with these strategies. Great, let's use those to encourage these areas of opportunity that we want to grow. And in that parent education component, you're saying, hey, here's how and why your child is learning differently, and how we can use that beautiful difference to facilitate further skill development.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and
But
I like, please, no, go ahead.
it's so interesting because no, that's just not what is universally ABA, and it's very much extinguishing, ignoring, shutting down, making presenting of neurotypical from what I see, like in the schools that we work with, the clinics that we work with. I will say these large companies, we don't work with a lot of, there's not a ton of small companies around us. So I will say it's those big ones that like everybody knows is mainly what's around us. And it's all about how to stop every behavior. And it's just through token economies or reinforcement charts or drills or even discrete trial training, still, like I've talked about, still very much used, and withdraw removal. And to like to this day, we just did an event not that long ago with an ABA company, and I left and I was like so brokenhearted because I was so excited to be in that space to be like, hey, like let's move forward together. And I was like, no, there's no moving. There's no. This can't be.
I will say there is like I felt really affirmed at I went to the Washington ABA conference last year with a bunch of my coworkers from Ascend, which was really cool. And Courtney and Jonathan Tarbox, they're a married couple. They own their own clinic, I believe, in California, and they presented an article using I think it was called like Compassionate Care and ABA, something like that. But they had this concept of kind extinction, which when they described it, I was like, this was always my understanding of extinction. You can ignore a specific behavior, like, and by ignore, I'm doing air quotes again, like, meaning you're not going to allow it to act as communication anymore, because that's what a behavior is. They're trying to communicate something, right? While also being compassionate toward the child, while still giving them a hug, helping them through their disappointment, like staying in the room with them, being near them. You cannot allow a behavior to work for them anymore, because that's essentially what you do when you do an extinction procedure. You're just not allowing a behavior to contact that thing. But it's not a one or the other. Like, you have to shape it. You're not ready for the full thing to be gone. I'll allow you to do something different, or I'm going to help you, or I'm going to be there for you while you like work through this disappointment. And they're presenting this article, and they have ACT in it. Like, they're using the tenets of ACT in it. And I don't even know if we've talked much about ACT yet, but
No, that's
we
what we're
can.
getting to
I was
next.
just gonna
Okay.
say, yeah, we need to dive into
Yeah.
that. Yes.
So, but they have the tenets of ACT in it, and I was sitting there like, oh my God, like this is like everything that I have been feeling and thinking and doing for years, and like having this anxiety that somebody's going to watch me and be like, you need to ignore them, you need to turn your back, and I'm going to be like, no, that's a child and I love them. I'm not doing that. So yeah.
What I think what you're saying too, and we'll definitely dive into ACT after this because I also have a way to pull Sarah into this who's just been excluded from the conversation. Sorry,
Sorry,
Sarah.
Sarah.
Listen, I'm taking it all in. I'm not excluded. I'm observing.
You're an absorber. You're
I'm
a
an absorber.
sponge.
I'm a sponge.
I think what you're saying, and this has come up on the podcast before, is that the people who are doing the therapy have to be good clinicians who have good intentions, who have intuition and insight and can read the clients. And that's where that breakdown is between a BCBA to an RBT a lot of the time, truly, is this is just someone who is 18 to 21 years old, who doesn't even have their brain fully developed, isn't in that space as a trained clinician to go, oh, I'm observing the child's needs right now, and I'm helping them access communication while also supporting what they're going through and trying to minimize the difficult behavior that might be presenting that's blocking their access to communication and connection.
Yeah, and you know, whenever I got a new RVT and I saw how they were trained before, and I would explain to them, you're working with me now, we do things different, they're always like, whoa, is that okay? Can I do that? I can hug them right now? Yes, please. They're like 3 years old. Please hug them. Please, they're sad. Don't let them sit in a corner and cry by themselves. And it's all, I always got this feedback of like, oh, this is the first way I've done this before. It's so different. Like, it's good different. And yeah, it was like a bummer to see that that's not what was happening. Cause my supervisors always trained me like that. I had, maybe I'll send this podcast to them, but Holly Vassar in Boston and Kevin Van Horn in Boston, also best clinical director I've ever had. They were amazing.
Do they have a podcast?
No, but they should.
Their name sounds so
they're
familiar,
like
yeah.
besties. And they were, I got the pleasure of them having be my two like clinical directors, and they never taught me extinction in that way. And I never was exposed to that, which I'm very thankful for. But if I was, I'd be like, again, I don't respond to people telling me to do things that I don't agree with very well.
Well, I think that's, yeah, go ahead, Courtney. I'm going to stop talking.
No. And I've had this discussion with someone who still works at the company that we were at, Allie, over and over again, is these types of approaches that are natural and feel natural to a lot of us are actually like harder concepts for some BCBAs and RVTs to grasp. I was talking to, you know, my coworker and my friend, and we were talking about how I think a lot of people that go into the field go into it because they resonate with it because it's black and white thinking. And think it's very much like, here's the data, this is the evidence, here's what we're, that's it. But then like how you and I approach things is different because we're living in that gray area. We're approaching, you know, the whole human, and that is hard. That's really hard for people. That's really hard. It is actually more work. If you're approaching it from a better, more healthily, more, you know, how we should be approaching it perspective, like it's hard. Spend way more time doing it than if you were not approaching it this way.
We love a protocol. We love a protocol. I can't.
Because it's measurable. It's quantifiable. It's measurable. You can track your progress. You can track your client's progress. You can put it on a paper and say, you can justify the work you've done. I've done this, and this, which is great. But we have to have flexibility. That can't be. That people are not robots. We just had that conversation offline too. Like, you can't.
Also, like, hello, we're people working with little kids and other human beings. Like, we need to have compassion too.
The thing that's always really confused me is that, like, so, like, one of the big things they talk about with autism is like they're hyper rigid. And then you get BCBAs coming in and being hyper rigid. So you're meeting hyper rigidity with hyper rigidity. And I'm like, where do you see this working? I don't understand.
Yes.
Like,
so well
maybe
said.
Maybe we could look at that a little bit. So,
I mean, I say that all the time. I was just saying that in a supervision today. I was like, we make this a diagnostic criteria of autism that we get fixated and we like routines. Don't all human brains, we like our consistency. When things change, this is why COVID was so hard for all of us, because you said, here's what was expected of you, everything is different now. And that's what we try to do to sweet autistic children and adults every day. Like, let me test you, let me change everything on you, because you must be cognitively flexible. It's like, no, how about I teach you that there are times where things will change unexpectedly and it stinks. You're right. It's really uncomfortable. But we have tools that can help us succeed in that. And I bet some tools that help you with that could be found in ACT.
Which is so funny.
Nice so little funny. Segue there. Well done.
Wow. She's really the queen of segues, I have to say.
I think I'm noticing that. It's amazing.
That's the new letters after my name. QOS, queen of segues.
Yep.
I love it. Yeah, so, okay, acceptance and commitment. It's either acceptance and commitment therapy, acceptance and commitment training. I prefer to say training because I just feel like, again, when I say therapy, it's like, again, I just see it as another teaching method. Like, it's just another training tool. But acceptance and commitment training, really at its core, the purpose of it, and it's also born out of behavioral therapy, like it was from BCBAs that started it. And the hope.
Sorry, spoiler alert for listeners, because a lot of people don't know this. I have clients, if you're listening, I haven't had this conversation with them yet, that hate ABA, against ABA, but they go to ACT therapists.
Oh, okay.
Fascinating, isn't it?
Hmm. Yeah. And again, I mean, I get it. Like, I more often than not, when I was doing intakes, especially back when I was in clients' homes, they were like, after we worked together for a while, after I did an assessment, they were like, we don't really understand what all of our friends have been saying. Our experience with ABA has been really good. And I'm like, I'm glad that you've had that good experience. I'm not invalidating anybody else's experience. I believe that it's out there. But with ACT, like the whole idea is to support psychological flexibility or cognitive flexibility. And it's different from like a CBT or a psychotherapy, and that we're not trying to change like the form of your thoughts or anything like that. It's more your like behavioral relationship to them and how you react and respond when they pop up, and teaching the skills to notice them, to flexibly interact with them, and to make informed decisions based on your core values. So like a big tenet of ACT, the main tenet of ACT is the focus on values, as well as mindfulness, or they call it focus on the contact with the present moment. But all of the principles of it are all behavioral skills that need to be taught. Like if you are constantly denying your experience or your internal experience, then you're not going to be able to change your behavior because you're tied to this piece of yourself. Or if you're not able to engage in some psychological flexibility, that's where that rigidity comes in, and that stops you from acting in accordance with your values. When people don't live a life in accordance with their values, they're like, well, I'm doing this thing that society has told me should make me happy. I'm doing this thing that my parents have told me should make me happy, but not ever addressing what they would actually make them happy. So in kind of bringing the two together, we're both addressing the internal private events, bringing light and bringing more awareness for the individual on what is important to them and the things that are kind of holding them back from it, while at the same time using the principles of ABA, like reinforcement and shaping, and like more of like a systematic process. Like there's kind of a process to ACT as well to support the whole human, not just what we can see, but what's also going on inside too.
See, we still love a protocol.
We still love a protocol. I love a framework because I like a place to start, you know?
Yes.
There's no like with ACT, you don't start at this place and then go through this step and then you're finished. It's like, you have all of these different things that you can work on and that we know are affecting the whole human, but each person is going to need it to be individualized, just like what ABA focuses on is, in my opinion, individualizing treatment for a person.
Yeah. And I think it's a much more person-centered way of using ABA, that if more BCBAs are diving into ACT, especially for older kids and working on these spoken communication needs and these different behavioral emotional needs, I think it provides a great framework and modality for that supports focused, strengths focused, and understanding how to teach those skills across varying neurotypes. Because something we've talked about in past podcasts is in neuroaffirming care, that mental health therapists and clinicians aren't always trained in neurodivergent needs as well. and understanding that my brain's going to learn this differently and I might need to practice this psychological flexibility, this cognitive flexibility in a different way, it feels like ACT can fill some of those gaps. Mm-hmm. But it also feels like I think if you're specific about what you're doing with ACT, which you were very clear on how you would use ACT and how it's not psychotherapy, mm-hmm. where it's going to deeper roots, where it's more solutions-focused, right. reality-focused, giving mm-hmm. tangibles for the here and now, whereas in a CBT framework or a more psychotherapeutic framework, you're going to get to the root of those causes and kind of unpack some of maybe that trauma or those experiences in a different way. It feels like that's kind of the separation of those two.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. Like, I think that I definitely with my clients am not diving deep into like, where did this thing come from? It's more of like the, what is your internal voice? What's the dialogue going on in there right now? And how can we let that exist in your mind and also choose to do something different? Because that's kind of the nature of thoughts, right? Like even in a CBT format, like you can categorize a thought and you can know, oh, when I have this category of thought, maybe that's something I should look at and evaluate. I'm having this should statement right now, you know, like or I'm catastrophizing or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm not focusing on that with my clients. I'm focusing on, okay, that thought can be there. We can notice it. I use like there's a funny sushi train metaphor that I talk about with the clients that I work with, where
yes.
you can imagine that the mm-hmm. thought is on a sushi train and you just see it and you let it go by and then you recenter in your present moment and you choose to act accordance with your values by the person that you want to be with, even if that thought exists. Just because that thought exists doesn't mean that you're a bad person, doesn't mean that you're what that thought is. It's just there. It's just like any other thought that pops through your mind at any given time throughout the day. It's just like what you do with it and how you react to it that or respond to it
right.
that kind of shapes your behavior or changes your behavior.
Absolutely. And it's funny because everything you're saying, I'm like, yeah, this is what I do all day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I just teach it through some different skills. And through like a social cognitive executive functioning lens and how we do it in a group construct mm-hmm. as well as individual. Sarah,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to lob the ball to you. No, I see you listening. No. Listeners, trust me, Sarah's in it. But I'm curious, like what thoughts came up in hearing that? Because here's my other thought. So you can go somewhere else with it. But my thing is, mental health practitioners are very protective of that work and that world. And it sounds like, and I say this as a music therapist who gets in trouble if we dip our toe too far, okay? You know, if I cross that line of supporting someone's well-being, where's the line of it's the music therapist's job versus a mental health practitioner's job? And it sounds like ACT is dancing this line too. And I'm, yeah, go ahead, Sarah.
Well, the what's interesting is that very similarly to kind of everything that Allie had said in the beginning about the non-rigidity perhaps of like choosing a framework or choosing a theory or choosing a practice or choosing a technique and sticking to that and having to like not veering out of that and you know, this is one way to treat somebody and that's it. You know, I don't subscribe to that at all, obviously. I'm sure people are so surprised to hear that, but, you know.
Stunned.
Shocker. But what's interesting is that I sort of see ACT and CBT as almost like we do it in tandem. Like I do a lot of stuff with clients where, yes, I want to get to the underlying root of these thoughts and these beliefs that then lead to what we would call target behaviors or behaviors that we want to change. But there's also a real world practice that I think is so valuable. And it's something that I'm super, super focused on with like, okay, how are you going to take this out of this room today? You know, without unpacking decades of trauma or decades of history or decades of mm-hmm. patterns and beliefs. How are you going to go out of this office today and be able to function a little bit better?
Mm-hmm.
So I do those, I use sort of little snippets from both at the same time, because we'll do a little bit of work around where is this coming from, just so we have an understanding, because my belief also is that awareness, self-awareness is like 90% of the work of therapy, right? Like mm-hmm. just being aware of why you do things, what you're doing, how you're doing it, how you're interacting with other people, what it's doing in the, how you are in the world. Once you're aware of that, then you can do it differently if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of simple, right? But so we do a lot of that, a lot of the sort of just being aware of and understanding either A, that you are doing something, or B, why you're doing it. And let's also identify some tangible skills that you can take with you, you can start working on right now, go home and practice that. And then we'll come back next week, do a little more digging, a little more unpacking, and then either pivot or tweak or reapply some of these other techniques that are more of the present focused, you know, just sort of being okay with maybe some of the thoughts that you have that you're not, that can't be changed right now, that need a little bit more time, accepting those, noticing them, letting them pass by on the sushi train, and still being able to function. Alyssa is just cracking up. She's on mute and I can't focus.
I'm sorry.
Neurodivergent brain is just looking at you laughing. So it's interesting that when you first started talking, Allie, about ACT, and you're sort of saying like it's different from CBT, like, and there's like it's such a different approach, and I was sort of like, oh, is it, like, because it feels they're so similar for yeah. me and my practice. It's two sides of the same coin, right? It's yeah. they're sisters.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because like I've never taken a class in CBT. It's like my understanding that I know that I'm not trying to change your relationship to it. And it's, I mean, I've been in therapy for a real long time and I love it.
I was gonna say, you said some CBT code words. I suspect your therapist might be CBT therapist.
I've been in some intensive therapy for quite some time. I love my therapist. Maybe I'll send her this podcast actually. No, she would love it. Shout out Rachel. Oh wait, should I say my therapist's name?
I think it's okay for how much you want to disclose. I think it's okay. I can bleep
there's
it
a lot
out.
Of Rachel's in the world. That's fine.
Yeah, that's like one of my friends is a therapist. Her name's Rachel. Shout out other Rachel.
Yeah. Hey. No, but I think like, you know, I focus or in it we focus on how is that thought, or even just bringing awareness to the fact that you even had that. And that might have been and again, this is where behavior comes in, or ABA comes in, that was an antecedent to this behavior that you are continuing to do that doesn't seem to be working for you based off what you have told me. And, you know, sometimes I do need to dig and I need to get to kind of like a where does this come from? But I definitely don't, I think, go to the level that like I've gone to with my therapist for sure. And over time, like when I've worked with clients for a long time, it kind of comes up, but there are things that I'm sure a therapist would find out much sooner that I found out like 2 years in working with a client, because that's just, we just don't go that deep because we're focusing on more like, it feels like maybe a little bit more moment to moment, like more recent things rather than sure. going as in full depth. But
yeah. And I think, as a thoughtful practitioner, when you see things arise that are out of your scope, you would refer out, because
mm-hmm.
that's what yeah. we do too. Like everything you're talking about, I do as a music therapist, and there are elements of it that fall well within my scope because I am mm-hmm. using music and music creation and active music making and all of these things to work on these skills. Mm-hmm. And then when we tap into a place where I feel like we are out of my depth, then I refer out and say, hey, we really yeah. need some support from XYZ. But I also think you said a really important phrase there, that they said themselves right? That someone says, this is the challenging behavior and I have autonomy over it. I'm naming it, I'm claiming it, I'm saying it to you. Or you're putting the mirror up of like, oh, I heard you say this thing we really need to zoom in on. And I think that's the hard thing when we're thinking of back to like traditional ABA with our non-speaking clients, that we're assigning meaning to what they're using as communication. And it's really hard because in ACT, you have this autonomous person who's speaking or using AAC or whatever mode of communication they have to tell you what they're feeling, thinking, and that behavior's maybe root or that behavior that's presenting. Whereas in early childhood pediatric therapy, we're often detectives of why is this happening? Because they can't tell me, show me, don't have access to communication yet. And it's really challenging to still give autonomy to the client in that situation while being the best detective you can be.
Yeah.
That's the piece. Yeah. So interestingly, that is the piece that has always sort of like triggered me or bothered me about ABA is simply that now to preface this, like I don't work with children. So
you're a parent.
I mean, yes, I am. But I mean, in my work, right? So the idea that, as I mentioned before, we have what we refer to as like target behavior. So when a person comes to see me, they say, I'm here for these reasons. Like they have an idea. And sometimes they don't really know and they figure it out. But again, that is never coming from me, ever. I'm never saying, hey, you need to change this. Let's work on this part, right? We are collaborative, or they're telling me.
Even when you want to.
Even when I want to. Sometimes it might slip out. No, just kidding. But with ABA, it almost feels like, from my understanding, I'm not trained in this, but from what I hear about it from other people, it feels very much like the clinicians or the people practicing are the ones who are determining the target behaviors. They're saying these behaviors are problematic, and so we're going to change these and fix these and make them different. And that feels really uncomfortable for me. Now, on the one hand, I can recognize that, right? So if you have a child who is physically assaulting people because they can't communicate their needs effectively, right, it's very clear that that's a problem behavior. That is a problem.
Displaying high magnitude behaviors.
It is, but it's problematic in society. You can't assault people just to try to get your point across, or you shouldn't.
Just kidding.
Shucks. So you know there are I think in some instances where it's like, this is an obvious, and that is, I'm using an exaggerated example on purpose because it's a little bit more obvious, but it feels like for a lot of the things that ABA is prescribed for, they are problematic, and I'm using air quotes there, as identified by...
Well, definitively problematic.
by, like, the other people in that child's life.
Yeah.
And they don't have the voice there. And so I feel like that for me, after talking with Courtney for as long as I've known Courtney and talking with Allie and the other ABAs that we've had on this podcast and just knowing what I know about it, there are so many, I can subscribe to tons of the parts of ABA that I think seem to be not problematic. But then there are parts that are very problematic. And for me, that's the part that just always sort of just like, but who has the problem here? Like, who's the one?
Well, and that, like, I'm going to take the onus off Allie and ABA and Courtney as a whole and zoom it out to pediatric therapy in general. Because who has the problem if a pediatric also client is coming to your office?
Also true.
The right? Parent. School or school. Yeah. I'm going to take also onus parents, off the amazing parents who work really hard, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's the parent, and sometimes it's a parent that it's like, okay, all right, but we're going to look at this instead.
If we take it out even further, it's actually like society as a whole that has this issue. And like, one of the things that I think that really like shifted a lot for me when I did start using like ACT for myself, not even because I did it with myself, and I'm a firm believer that if you're going to be a practitioner of ACT, and we do say ACT because it's like you are actively acting to change something about yourself, right? Like the ACT people are very, very specific about, not ACT, it's ACT because we're changing things, right? But like when I started it with myself, I was like, is this a belief that I have that I am tied to in my soul, or is it something that society has made me believe is like something that I should do? And that was one of the biggest things that I did with using ACT in my practice with parent training and with the RBTs and whatever. It's like, are you concerned about this behavior of like maybe your child? Like, let's take like repetitive behavior, like flapping, like stereotype behavior, like that. Are you concerned about this behavior because it's interfering with their quality of life, or because they're unable to learn with it, or because it's dangerous for them? Or are you concerned about what people are looking at when you see this? And that's where bringing in that internal voice of what was that thought you had right before you interrupted your kid and didn't like it, and you didn't get the outcome that you wanted. Oh, that person was looking at me and giving me a face, and I know that people look at me, and I don't want them to stigmatize my child, and I don't want X, Y, and Z thing to happen, right? You're not in your present moment. You're not with your child. Your mind is thinking elsewhere, and that's affecting how you're acting. That's affecting how you behave with your child, which is against your values. That I want my child to be autonomous. I want my child to have ownership over their body, but your worries about what other people are thinking or what society has said is stopping you from doing that. And when you kind of like take off the blinders, call that out to a parent or a teacher or whoever that you're working with, they're like, oh, yeah, like that makes sense. Like you are taking away that child's autonomy and their like beautiful and wonderful way of existing because it like looks, quote unquote, looks a certain way. Or like it's gonna be judged a certain way. So like I agree. I don't like that about ABA either. I don't like the like I'm huge like consent is everything. Assent is everything. Like we're not making you not you. We're just helping you be your best you so that you can get everything you want out of life.
It's providing access. It's not to change, but it's providing you access to all the
Yeah.
parts of yourself. I do internal family systems therapy, can you tell? To all the parts of yourself that make you you. And I think, yeah, it's really interesting to hear because I think ACT also can be so helpful. I know it's for adults. Like, I know people use it. I think especially n not to pinpoint to a certain sect of the population, but I think a lot of adult men who for a long time were told therapy is bad or we don't go to therapy, we don't talk about our feelings. I feel like ACT is a pathway in, right? Of we're not going to talk about our feelings. We're not really going to talk about our feelings. And not in a bad way. I'm not saying that in a bad way, but we're going to acknowledge that they're there. We're going to try to understand why they're present and find a tool to react to what's happening in a way that will feel good to you, right? It's a very tangible, supports-focused model that I personally, I love those kind of models. That's my style for sure. But I think that could be, I know a few men in my life, not my husband, we'll take him off the plate for that, but a few men very close to me in my life that I think ACT could be the only way to help them start their therapeutic journey because it's just enough to have them start to understand self, understand, and it's like that beginnings of psychoed. And then CBT takes that and can go even deeper, but it's that pathway in.
No, I mean, it's like I have clients, I have older men as clients, I have a lot of dads, you know, that come and work with me, and it kind of ends up being the thing that like they feel at least connected to, or at least that they can like do, because you know they love to do action, right? Like it's hard to just sit there and talk, like you want their solution focused, right? And it's cool to work with young kids who are like in the prime of their life, like learning these skills, so that you can hopefully we can generate a future generation of men and women who are like being more intentional and thoughtful about the ways that they're like existing.
And to the dads and men listening, I'm not trying to throw shade. A lot of,
Definitely not.
especially, Gen X and boomer men were raised in a time that was very cut and dry, black and white, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that
our it's belief not your fault.
Around, no, that belief around emotional expression and understanding and therapy, right? That's taboo and men don't feel and men don't cry. And that was so imposed on us. So I love that. And it makes complete sense, Sarah, that you're saying you use a lot of the same tenets because you see a lot of men too.
I do. Mm-hmm. I do. Mm-hmm. I want to shout out. I want to shout out the boomers and the Gen X men.
Heck yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gen X men.
X-Men.
Shout out to the X-Men. They're my faves. The Gen N. Oh, why can't I say this? Anyway, I want to shout out the men because I have seen in my practice that at this point, I think I've said this on the podcast before, like at least half of my caseload currently are adult men. And mm-hmm. I love that for them because, I mean, everybody needs it.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
Maybe especially men. I don't. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm like, but, this is it. This is like the Manscaped of therapy, right? Like this little thing you're gonna market to men.
Yep. There you go. There you go. Yep. But no, it's really it's great that and I think that it's appropriate, and you know, especially with the populations that I work with and the things that people are coming to see me for are a lot of things that are like environmentally based or societally based, like, you know, mm-hmm. struggles with anxiety and adjustment and, you know, just kind of making your way in this world. Those need tangible solutions.
Yeah. I love it. I've really loved learning about ACT because I have several clients who are in it and a lot of people who rave about it. And I think it's hilarious. That they are also parents who are super anti-ABA. And I'm like, do you know the origins of this? And I don't want to like yuck their yum. I'm like, I'm glad you're having a good time. And I don't want to ruin that positive relationship you have. So
don't Google, where did ACT come from?
Exactly. Exactly. But yeah, I mean, it's been very enlightening, Allie, to have you on and just have another perspective in this world of therapy that we have. We appreciate your openness to these conversations that are hard.
Sure. Yeah, no, I really appreciate being able to come on. And I think that, you know, hearing your guys' experience with other BCBAs and having like what I'm saying sound unique is like saddening to me. Also like happy. Because yeah, I want this to be more of the norm. So
in the chat, we're saying, Allie, you got to let people know where they can find you.
Oh, sorry, I didn't even know there was a chat. Okay, so you guys can find me on Instagram. I am at balanced, BALANCED, behavior with 2 underscores at the end. My website is balanced-behaviorconsulting.com. You can find all of my... You can read about me. You can read about what I do. You can contact me there or you can send me a DM. Follow along.
I'll link all her stuff in the show notes too so you can find it and you can hit her up if this sounds like something that you would benefit from or know someone who would. I think Ali sounds like a pretty fabulous resource.
Thanks. I work with kids, teens, adults, parents. I do ACT mentoring, so if you're a BCBA or someone wanting to learn how to do this, or if you're a BCBA or own a company that thinks people need to evolve, let me know and I'll come give you a talk.
Yeah, we love the evolution. We're here for the growth.
Yay. Cool. Thank you guys so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for being on. And we don't have Noah, so I guess I'll say it. But for now, bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Coffee and Therapy. Keep the conversation flowing and follow us over on Instagram at Coffee and Therapy. Questions, thoughts, ideas? Email us coffeeandtherapy@gmail.com. We can't wait for you to listen in again soon.